From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Well, the pumpkins are still on the stoops, and the stores have started to put out their Christmas stuff. That can only mean one thing. Thanksgiving has snuck up on us again. 8 days to go, and many of us still haven't had a moment to plan. Have no fear, Sam Sifton is here. The New York Times food editor has tips on getting the dishes just right, on how to prepare for the feast, and how to have fun doing it. This hour on Point, getting ready for Thanksgiving with a little help from the High Priest of Thanksgiving. Are you ready? Listeners, what's your job this year? Roasting the turkey, making that side dish? Join us at onpointradio.org, on Twitter and Facebook, where they're at On Point Radio. With me from New York City this full hour, Sam Sifton. He's food editor, the New York Times, founding editor of the paper's New York Times cooking website and app. And not coincidentally, he's also the author of the book Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. Sam, nice to have you again for another hour this year. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. So you wrote in the New York Times cooking newsletter this week, quote, "I am the coach running vicious practices because I want you to win. There's a lot of stuff to do before we cook. 8 days out from Thanksgiving, where should we begin? What should we be doing right now?"
I think now is the time to kind of begin to settle a little bit on what you're going to cook and who's going to be there, kind of firming up that guest list and clearing out the kitchen and pantry a little bit in advance of what will be a weekend of shopping and preparation. It's a good time to get that freezer free of all that junk that accumulated there over the summer, to spruce up that spice rack and get rid of all that dead paprika and get ready for a great week ahead. It's going to be fun.
All right. Freezer clean, pantry clean, spice rack. All right. Done. Check that off. Help us with some of the skills we're going to need to deploy this week, Sam. Start us off with the turkey. Most important thing we need to know about that turkey.
Listen, the most important thing to know about the turkey is it's going to be fine. You're going to do a great job. It's just a big chicken, and we're going to treat it as such, and we're going to end up with a nice, juicy, delicious, burnished bird, the color of gold and brown and sunset, and it's going to be delicious. You're going to get there. It's not going to be difficult.
How long does a frozen turkey take to defrost?
Oh, great question. It takes about, in a normal refrigerator at around 39 or 40 degrees, it'll defrost at a rate of about 5 pounds every 24 hours.
Okay. And talk to us about the cooking process. You've explored brining. You've talked about butterflied turkeys, spit-roasted turkeys, deep-fat fried turkeys. What's your favorite way to cook a bird? What do you suggest?
Oh, I've done them all, Jane. I love that fried bird. I really, really do love a deep-fried turkey, but it's, you know, what you end up with is 5 or 6 gallons of used oil that you just aren't going to get rid of until the new year, and it's just going to weigh on you like an albatross. So what I have come to do is just roast a bird. I don't brine it. I salt it a couple days ahead of time and then leave it in the refrigerator unadorned by plastic. And I allow the chill air of the refrigerator and the salt itself to tighten up the skin and get it very, very dry so that when it goes into the oven, that skin immediately begins to crisp, to form a kind of blister around the delicate breast meat and the thigh meat. Remember that if the bird goes in wet, the oven heat has to evaporate that water before it gets to work on the skin itself, and that we don't want. So a dry bird going into a hot oven is your best bet at Thanksgiving success.
I'm looking at the screen here. The Associated Press has linked one death to ongoing turkey salmonella outbreaks. Are there any cautions here? I mean, I don't want to be a killjoy, but anything to think about here as we cook these?
Oh, my goodness. Here come the fear mongers now.
Blame the
producer.
Well,
I'll say this. If you're going to fry a turkey, wear shoes. If you're going to roast a turkey, I suggest you not leave it on the counter for 3 or 4 days before you put it into the oven. I think the chances that salmonella is going to visit your Thanksgiving table are nil, or close to nil. Obviously, you want to keep your workspace clean. There's a lot of debate over whether you should wash the turkey or not wash mm-hmm. the turkey for years. Julia Child, in fact, I think was the progenitor of the washing the chicken canard, as we've learned. Much better to just pat it dry before you salt it and put it in the fridge and get going, and try to avoid as much as possible cross-contamination, that is to say touching other things with your turkey skin covered hands. And you'll probably be fine. I think you're gonna be fine.
Okay, stuffing in the turkey or outside the turkey?
Absolutely outside the turkey. This for a couple of reasons. One, I like stuffing. And there's not enough stuffing if it's only inside the turkey, even if you have a gigantic turkey. So cook the stuffing outside the turkey so you can make more of it. That's number one. Number two, if you fill a turkey to the brim with stuffing, it's going to take a lot longer to cook. And where we're going to get in trouble there is either the breast meat's going to be overdone, or the stuffing itself is not going to be heated all the way through to the very center of the bird, which could lead to tummy problems later in the day.
Okay. Turkey stock. You wrote, Sam, that the first thing you want to do on Thanksgiving morning is put that turkey neck in a pot of water with vegetables and just let it go. Talk to us about the turkey stock.
Well, the truth of the matter is that's a cheat. That's the easiest way to get turkey stock when you have no turkey stock, right? You've been running late. You had to work Wednesday. It's Thursday morning. There are 13, 14 people coming in 9 hours. And what are you going to, oh, I need turkey stock. There is a neck in that bird. We can use it to make a quick stock on the stovetop. And I do that as a matter of almost religious principle. It's just something that I have always done. But I really suggest to you, if you're serious about turkey stock, and you ought to be serious about turkey stock, that maybe this weekend, in addition to all the other stuff you buy a couple of turkey wings and roast them in the oven or in the toaster oven for that matter and get them nice and caramelized and done, and use that to create a stock this weekend that you can then augment with that turkey neck on Thanksgiving morning. Mm. The point is you're always going to have this bubbling or near bubbling cauldron of turkey stock near you throughout Thanksgiving itself, because it's going to come in handy for all sorts of things, not just the gravy at the end of the day, but as a moistening liquid for the stuffing that you're cooking outside of the bird, to refresh the carved turkey meat on the platter before it goes out. That's a great trick right before you serve. And there it is, right there. You started it at 8 in the morning, and it's bubbling away. And it gives the house a wonderful scent before the turkey itself gets roasting. And it's just good to have around.
Mm. What about turkey legs? I thought that we were supposed to buy the legs and roast them. Is that no?
You certainly can.
Okay.
There's certainly more
improvise.
Meat on them.
All right. Okay.
You can. I use the wings because they're dirt cheap. I'm not looking for the meat off them.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the flavor that comes from the skin and the bones. But I've absolutely done it with drumsticks as well, and that's acceptable.
All right.
Your decisions are acceptable.
We've had many listeners tell us they look forward to this hour with you every year. My board's already lit up with calls. Sam Sifton,
excellent.
Let's get Mark in here from Coconut Grove, Florida. He's got a question about turkeys. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So basically, I'm the one that does the turkey every year, and it's conventional oven, electrical at home, a lot of people. This year is a little bit different. We're taking the trawler down to the Keys, and it's just my wife, my daughter, and I, and a small gas oven. I was wondering if there's anything different about the gas oven, maybe moisture. I don't know. It's my first time with a gas oven.
Well, you're doing it on board the trawler? Oh, excellent. Well, your main issue here is that's a very small oven. You're not going to see a difference in the quality of the heat, but you are going to see a difference in the size of the cooking area. So your bird's probably going to be pretty small. You've got a small group. You may just do a breast, or you may do a couple thighs. And I think other than that, other than the size, you're going to be in the same boat, that you would have been if you were ashore.
Have fun, Mark. Thanks so much for the call. Sam Sipton, what about cranberry sauce? The glue of the meal, you say. Cranberry sauce. Yes.
Very, very important.
Okay.
Very important. There are families, there are people I know who grew up with the canned variety, and that's fine. I'm not going to judge them, though I don't like the flavor of it with the extra high fructose corn syrup in there. But I absolutely think it ought to be on the table. And it's something that I generally make on Wednesday night in advance of the holiday. And I do it very, very simply with just a couple bags of the raw cranberries, a bunch of sugar, a splash of orange juice to loosen everything up, and then cook it along until it starts to bubble and the fruit begins to pop. The popping of the cranberry berries is very important because it releases the pectin that allows it to become a kind of jelly, that allows it to thicken up. I get lots of calls and tweets and IMs and the like saying, hey, my cranberry sauce hasn't set up. What did I do wrong? You didn't cook it long enough. You need to cook it until those berries pop and release the pectin that will turn it into beautiful cranberry sauce.
So our producer, Steph, made your cranberry relish in advance of this interview today. And I have to say, it was delicious. Everyone in the studio had a spoon in and we were heating it up. It was really good.
That's a terrific recipe of my colleague Melissa Clark's. And it, what's really neat about it is that there we're in a totally different mindset. I said you got to cook and cook and cook. In that relish, the cranberries are raw and they're blitzed in a food processor and sweetened and thickened with honey, which is really kind of a cool way of doing things.
Well, we're a week out getting ready for the big Thanksgiving feast. You can join the conversation, listeners. Do you overcomplicate this big meal? Do you stress out? Do you go out? What's your question for Sam Sifton this hour? More of your calls, more questions for Sam, more of his advice for us all. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about how to cook and really enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner this hour. You can join the conversation. What is the problem dish in your life, on your table? What's your best dish? Are you trying to accommodate lots of different kinds of eaters this Thanksgiving, or letting people fend for themselves? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Sam Sifton is here to help. He's food editor of the New York Times, founding editor of the website New York Times Cooking, and author of Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. I want to listen to Melissa Clark here, Sam, your colleague. In a New York Times video, she's explaining how she makes candied sweet potatoes. She bakes the sweet potatoes in their jackets till they're soft. That's the day before. And then on Thanksgiving Day, she peels off the skin. And here's what she does next.
I'm going to simmer together a third of a cup of maple syrup, a third of a cup of apple cider, 3 tablespoons of butter, a teaspoon of grated orange zest, and 2 cloves, a cinnamon stick. Now just cut up your sweet potatoes. Any shape is fine. I like nice, thick slices. Put them in a pan. Now just pour on the glaze. This is going to bake in a 425 degree oven until it's bubbling and golden.
425 degree oven for about 35 minutes, I think, Sam. Right?
Yeah, that'll do it. That is a ridiculously flavorful dish.
Oh, it sounds delicious. Is it hard to get everything done on the same day, especially the bird, all the fixins? I mean, what are your tips? What do you say to people who are just so tired by the end of it all, they can't sit down and enjoy the meal with everybody else?
Oh, they'll enjoy the meal just fine. They'll sit down and revel in the success of their day. You know, I offer a lot of advice, and I try and make people feel confident that they're going to pull it off. Last year, Melissa and I took on the challenge in real time. And we said, can we cook a meal for 14 to 16 people in an 8-hour run? And you know what? Working together, we pulled it off with aplomb, with no help at all.
Two of the best chefs around. Let's not kid each other here.
No, I'm a big drag on Melissa. I got to tell you, I get distracted and start looking around. No, it works out just fine. The real thing you're going to have to deal with is the space-time continuum, which is to say, what's in the oven when? Mm-hmm. And things that people forget, a key factor that people forget is that we want to rest the turkey once it comes out of the oven. And that gives you a good 30 to 45 minutes up to an hour where you could just blast the heat and do those sweet potatoes that Melissa just told us about, or reheat a casserole of some sort and get stuff done in the oven while the turkey is resting. So there's a lot of hurry. It's like making movies. That's what it is, Jane. We've got a lot of hurry up and wait. So you've got these unattended cooking times when the turkey is going along. And that's when you want to create your mashed potatoes. That's when you want to work on various Brussels sprouts dishes and the like. And then that turkey comes out and bam, that oven is open and should be used up to the very last moment.
Okay, stage this properly. So we've got a diverse crowd around our table this year. We've got traditional eaters who expect all the traditional fixins. We've also got two new vegans. Our son's fiance from Mumbai, who we want to make her feel welcome, and a bunch of little kids. What's your advice to start thinking about a recipe for everybody? How does a chef make everybody happy?
Well, by serving stuff that will make some of the people happy, right? Those kids are going to be fine with breast meat and mashed potatoes, and maybe they'll even like some gravy. And the traditionalists are going to get what the traditionalists are going to get. Maybe this is a good year to introduce a showstopper of a vegan kind of side dish that is really a main course. And for that, I like a stuffed squash of some sort with lots of nuts in there and fruit. That provides some protein alongside the delicious squash flavor. And then for our guest from Mumbai, welcome to America. This is how we do it. And it really is interesting to me, because what happens when newcomers join our Thanksgiving tables is that on that first year, they kind of allow the family's traditions, whatever those traditions may be, to wash over them. But within a year or two, you'll see that all of a sudden now here comes her contribution, which is different from what was originally in the family tradition, and it becomes part of the tradition as well. So a masala spice turkey is in your future.
There's a great piece in the New York Times by Julia Muskin about the first Thanksgiving in America for some of our refugees, right? Great piece that Julia wrote.
Thank you. She did a marvelous job with that. And I think it expresses something that I think is true about Thanksgiving, which is Thanksgiving belongs to all of us. And when I say all of us, I mean all of us who live in America, whether we are yet citizens or not. It's a way to assimilate, but it's also a way to change the very culture that we have. The notion that every Thanksgiving, that the traditional Thanksgiving that we always talk about, the notion that that is actually a Norman Rockwell freedom from want basic cliche just isn't true. The traditional Thanksgiving is the Thanksgiving that is traditional to you, and that may and probably does include the flavors of all the nations that have come together to make this nation a strong one. And to see that at its very beginning, as Julia was able to do with these immigrants to our country who are experiencing their first Thanksgiving, the first Thanksgiving, it's heartwarming and exciting and underscores what a great holiday it really is for all Americans.
All right. Back to the nitty-gritty here. Good gravy. A lot of questions about good gravy, Sam Sifton. I want to play this clip of you in a New York Times video explaining how to make pan gravy for the turkey. You make it sound so simple. I'll play a bit, and then you can take it on the other side.
The essential ingredient in any pan gravy is the drippings, the fat. Here, I've got the pan set over medium heat, and I'm adding flour to the fat to create a kind of roux. I'm going to stir constantly, keeping the mixture moving until it's a deep golden color. Now increase the heat to medium-high and add a little wine, whisking as you go to let it reduce.
So then, Sam, a little salt and pepper sounds so good. It's much simpler, really, than I would have thought.
It's dead simple. People freak out about this. It's not that complicated. You have fat. You're adding to it flour. You're incorporating those two things together and allowing them to cook so that you lose the raw flavor of the flour. And then you're adding a liquid, which will bloom into this thickened gravy. And then all you have to do is season it to your heart's content.
So
I said add wine. You could add turkey stock to that. You could add bourbon to that. You could add whatever you like, really.
Mm-hmm. Why is it better to stir flour into the hot fat, Sam, instead of just stirring in the flour slurry into the almost finished gravy? Why is that? Does that make a difference?
Yeah, it does make a difference, and it goes to the whether you can taste the flour as raw flour or whether you can taste the kind of nutty, toasted, fully incorporated roux of it. That is to say, a combination of the fat and the flour. I don't want to taste flour. I'm only using flour as a thickening agent.
We are talking Thanksgiving, we're talking turkey and many other things with Sam Sifton of the New York Times. Let's go to Amy in Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for helping me out. I volunteered to find out a technique and recipe for cooking turkey, but just the size. And it needs to be delicious because of the difficult conversations that need to happen around the Thanksgiving table about the complexity of the history of the holiday at first, the first people and the implications of that, and then all that's happening where we're not properly welcoming immigrants.
Okay, so you're just to get back to the food, you're not cooking the whole bird, you're just cooking the thighs. Amy, thank you for the call. Sam Sifton, what do you say?
Okay, so we can get to the thighs and take care of it in just a second, and I will. But she raises a really interesting point, which is this quintessential American holiday that we all love is, let's be frank, based in a horror. There, the almost genocide that we're talking about in the beginning of our nation's history is something that we really should be wrestling with, perhaps not during the meal, but during the week that runs up to the holiday. And those difficult conversations, though we would like to avoid them at the Thanksgiving table, are present in our nation, and we should be aware of them. Now, for these turkey thighs, simple, simple, simple. You cannot mess up a turkey thigh. It's laden with fat. It's very hard to overcook. And you have a couple choices of how to prepare them. You can roast them in a pan, just as if you were doing the whole bird, four of them, let's say, in a pan. But I would probably add some liquid to that pan, a little wine, a little of our trusty turkey stock as well, to almost braise them from the bottom up so that the skin skin side up so that the skin becomes crisp, but the liquid beneath allows it to cook a little bit faster and super flavorfully.
Mm. Amy, thanks for the call. Let's get Mark in here from Williston, Vermont. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I got an electric smoker this summer and have had great success and a lot of fun with it. And I wondered if Sam might have any advice on smoking a turkey. I thought I'd try that this year.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I got to tell you, I think a smoked turkey can be one of the more delicious guests at a Thanksgiving table. What you need to be careful of is that the breast meat loves smoke. It loves smoke like, I mean, it's like a 3-pack-a-day Marlboro smoker. It really wants to pull in that smoke, and it can become, if you're not careful with your wood selection, it can become kind of acrid. So in Texas, you see a lot of smoked turkey with green oak, and that works really well. I think a mild smoke for a long period of time is going to do you just great in that electric smoker, and it'll be a really fine feed, and the sandwiches the next day will be nonpareil.
Mark, thanks for the call. Here's Tom in Smithfield, Virginia. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question. You recommend that the stuffing be made outside the turkey. Is there a way to cook stuffing so it tastes like it was cooked inside the turkey?
Yes, absolutely. So there are a couple things that you're going to get toward the end of your cooking day on Thanksgiving. One is all those drippings in the pan from the turkey. And you're going to use a lot of those drippings to make the gravy. But I warrant you're not going to use them all. And so in a lot of gravy recipes, you see pour off until there are just two or three tablespoons of the fat left or four tablespoons of the fat left. Well, if you have eight tablespoons, what are you going to do? Are you really going to throw away four tablespoons of hard-earned turkey fat? No. Drizzle it over the stuffing that you're cooking in the oven. Likewise, you got that turkey stock. I've been going on about that turkey stock all hour. You can put some of that turkey stock in there as well. And what that's going to do is provide a little bit of the, a lot of the flavor, juiciness, and fat that you would have gotten cooking the stuffing in the bird. But outside the bird, you can do it, as the technocrats say, at scale.
Tom, thanks so much for the call. So Sam Sifton talked about pies, pumpkin, pecan, apple. I admit I buy mine at a little bakery around the block. What are
your
thoughts?
I don't judge, Jane.
Okay, good.
I don't judge.
I was waiting for my chastening, but that's good. Okay.
No chastening. I find that the world is kind of divided into people who are savory cooks and people who are pastry cooks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are people who do both. I've certainly done both, but I admit, I outsource pie production to some amazing bakers who are my long-term guests, and I hope that they'll stick to the script and deliver that apple pie that we all love, that pumpkin pie that we all love, that pecan pie that we all love, and perhaps some of the more outrageous and beautiful pies that we put into the New York Times this year as part of our Pie-tacular Thanksgiving celebration. There's an apple ombre pie in there that uses different colored apples that's really beautiful and I hope delicious on my table.
Mm. So speak about your table. What are you cooking this year and who's around your table?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The cobbler's children go shoeless. I'm going to skedaddle out of work on Wednesday and try and put together a feast for 30 in, as they say on the radio, the overnight. It's going to be something. We'll do a traditional roast turkey. I make a kind of butter teriyaki rosemary base that I've used since I was in college. I'll supplement that with a bunch of turkey thighs so that there's plenty of dark meat to go around. We'll have a cornbread stuffing. We'll have some Brussels sprouts with bacon and cream. Mm. We'll have some sweet potatoes done just right. Mm. And I'm Elwin cranberry sauce and, of course, oceans and oceans of gravy. And I think it's going to work out just great. I can't wait.
30 people. So it's expensive to feed a crowd, right? Any tips for saving on the food bill at Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I can think of a couple. One is to outsource those pies. Okay. Another is to outsource the alcohol. Wine and spirits and specialty soda pops and all that kind of stuff, that can add up. And I don't want to put the arm on anyone who's coming to my Thanksgiving meal, but everyone always asks, is there something I can bring? And I say, yeah, bring a bottle of wine or two, or bring something to drink. And they do, and we find ourselves stocking up sometimes through the end of the holiday season as a result of this. I think that's the fairest way of spreading the cost around. I don't particularly recommend taking a shortcut on the bird itself and going for that supermarket frozen factory bird. But by the same token, I don't think you have to get a bird who went to college and majored in liberal arts. I think you can kind of find a middle ground. I get my turkey at a farm that, you know, is of no particular distinction except it grows, it harvests, and it sells excellent turkeys, and
one
that's
of our,
enough for me.
And one of our vegan listeners tweets, how about letting that turkey live a life? So there you go. Stuffed
Can
squash for him. Yeah.
Can I live?
Sam Sifton is our guest this hour. We are talking turkey and much more. We're getting into the right frame of mind for putting that Thanksgiving feast together. What's your question for Sam Sifton? What's your tip for pulling this all off? Much more after this break, including your calls, more comments and suggestions from Sam Sifton, the High Priest of Thanksgiving. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Sam Sifton is with me this hour. He's your Thanksgiving cooking guru. He's manning our Thanksgiving helpline today. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a moment from the Food Network's show Ultimate Thanksgiving Challenge. The chefs are each given half an hour to reimagine a classic Thanksgiving side dish. Just to add to the challenge, each dish has to include canned cranberry sauce in the recipe. Here is Deborah Vantrese, owner of a restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia, got assigned mashed potatoes and gravy.
I am going to do my mama's mashed potato cakes.
Mama's good, creamy, delicious buns, but you can always add to that. So I'm going to take mashed potato patty all over the world. I'm going to make mashed potato cake with Cajun andouille sausage from Louisiana, sage chimichurri from South America, and cranberry aioli from French cuisine.
Woohoo! Sam Sifton. There's a lot in there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
My heart is racing.
Yeah, you can stay traditional or you can really deviate, as we heard right there.
Yeah, but let's poke at that deviation.
Okay.
That is entirely because of television production values saying we're going to make a contest out of this.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what we ought to be doing at Thanksgiving. I mean, my heart is racing after hearing all that, in part because I'm sure that's delicious. All those ingredients are delicious. But they also sound like something that might be on a restaurant menu in a restaurant that might not make it. And the reason for that is it seems sort of creative simply for the sake of creativity, and a little extra. Mm-hmm. So, I'm trying to calm down.
All right. Let's get you calm with Lisa here in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air with Sam Sifton of the New York Times. Go ahead. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you so much. So I am in my kitchen right now prepping the dinner rolls for Thanksgiving. And for the first time, I'm supposed to be making a gluten-free option as well. And I'm a little worried about just throwing gluten-free flour into my normal dinner roll recipe. Mm. Any advice?
Yeah, I'm a little worried, too. yeah, those gluten-free dinner rolls can be a little scary. I'm glad you're trying now, because you're going to be able to take a couple runs at that recipe before D-Day. And I think you can just go one to one and we'll see what happens. I don't think you're going to get the loft or the sort of silkiness that you experience with the traditional dinner roll. But then again, it may work just well enough to pass.
Lisa, thanks so much. Here's Emily in Hagerstown, Maryland. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
My question is for people with a, I have some people around my table this year who have a sugar restriction. So I was wondering if you had any recommendations for traditional sides that would be diabetes friendly.
Yeah, it's a tough one this year or this part, this, yeah. This holiday is a very sweet holiday. What's interesting about the American palate is we like sweet, we like spicy, we like crispy, and, you know, anything that combines those three, we go wild for. And so when someone comes along and says, well, I have a sugar issue, I got to be careful, oh, I'm going to pull it out. here's what I always interrogate this in this way. I think that the real enemy here is raw sugar and you know, refined sugars and the like. I think that fruit sweetness can be your friend a little bit. Certainly something like the cranberry issue that we talked about earlier, where you're using raw cranberries and not breaking them down in a sugary solution, will be helpful. And also just thinking, okay, I'm going to steer toward savory this year. I'm going to steer toward, you know, sages. I'm going to steer toward nuts. I'm going to steer toward alliums and away from things like maple syrup and raw sugar and brown sugar and honey.
Mm, great call. Thanks so much. All right, Sam Sifton, let's get to the social dynamics. Around Thanksgiving, harder than the food.
Difficult.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about that in your own experience and what you've seen.
I think the most important thing to remember about the social dynamics of the dinner table, indeed of the whole day, is that whatever the issue is that you have, whatever the issue is that you're worried about, you're not going to litigate it on Thanksgiving. It's not going to be solved. The fact that Uncle Morty supports a political candidate or a political party that is the diametric opposite of your own is not going to change as you pass the mashed potatoes. The lecturing that you feel you ought to engage in, you shouldn't be engaging in. This is a holiday of fellowship and of giving thanks and, above all, of listening. I think that if we listened more during the Thanksgiving holiday, we'd probably have lower blood pressure as a result. Please don't try and solve anything in your family over the course of the Thanksgiving holiday. Just enjoy their presence, whatever they believe.
And what about those guests, Sam, that are getting in your way in the kitchen? I mean, you send some of them out to eat oysters, to shuck oysters out in the back porch,
I do.
Don't you?
Yeah. I do. I'm a firm believer that you shouldn't be serving appetizers at Thanksgiving because I didn't, or putting out nuts and cheese and olives and the like, because I'm not laboring all day so that you can eat half a pound of nuts and tell me you don't want seconds. That's not something I want to hear. But by the same token, at the very end of the process, when I'm juggling a lot of stuff in the kitchen, I kind of need a moment to just get everything square. And what I've done, or what I've come to do over the past couple of years, is to get a bunch of oysters. And I've got a buddy who's a master oyster shucker. And I just send everybody out in the yard with a lot of oysters and some Prosecco and just go hog wild. Give me that half hour. They're going to have a wonderful time, the kind of dying light of the day, eating these briny, oysters are just incredible this time of year, drinking a little Prosecco and getting ready. And when they're done, they come back in. I'm good to go. Everybody's happy.
Good idea. Linda in Tampa, Florida. You're on the air with Sam Sifton. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to know the best way to make mashed potatoes. I know that you could ruin the texture, I think, if it's the liquids aren't right or they absorb too much water while they're cooking.
Yeah, I think what you want to do is make sure that you don't overcook those potatoes in the original water. Then when you get them out, you want to rinse them, or rather sieve them, so that the water's off them. Then I put them back in the pot over low to medium heat so that we're evaporating that water and getting rid of it. Then when I'm going to add just shocking amount of butter and milk to the equation, I want to make sure that I don't need it scorching hot, but I do like that milk to be warm, and I like that butter, if not melted, then soft when it goes in, so that we're not creating crazy temperature changes in the mashed potatoes. Mm. Then, for the mashing itself, you have a couple choices. You can use the traditional masher, the kind of mallet style, or if you're careful about it, you can use a stand mixer, although you want to be careful not to over-whip them and make them gluey. Mm. Then, finally, more salt than you think.
More salt than you think. Uh-huh.
More salt. They can take a lot of salt.
Interesting.
I mean, don't go nuts at the beginning. Yeah. Add salt piece by piece, but they can take quite a bit and that flavor begins to pop. But the key, crazy amount of butter, a lot of warm milk. Don't overcook those potatoes. Make sure they're dry before you begin the mashing, and then don't overmash and make it gluteny.
Great.
Not literally gluten-y.
We've covered a lot. Mashed potatoes, turkey, gravy stuffing, cranberry sauce. What else is a must for the Thanksgiving table? And is there an it vegetable this year, an it spice, you know, something that you kind of want to throw out there?
That's interesting. For a while there, it seemed kale was the it vegetable. It was everywhere. There were kale salads on the Thanksgiving table or braised kale. Brussels sprouts have been an it vegetable for a long time. I'm betting for 2018 we're going to see a lot of squashes. There's a lot of interest in these autumnal squashes. You know, here I want a stuffed delicata squash, or I've got these beautiful little sugar pumpkins that I want to use. And my guess, just from my social media feeds and my inbox, is we're going to see a lot more squashes on tables this year than last. Mm.
Here's Hazel in Niagara Falls, New York. Hi, Hazel. Welcome to the program with Sam Sifton.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I saw something regarding cooking a turkey on the internet, and I just wanted to know his opinion. You take the backbone out of it and kind of flatten it, put it skin side, breast side up, and cook it that way. It seemed like it crisped all the skin at the same time and cooked it more evenly. What do you think?
I think that's exactly right. And I hope that when you say on the internet, you mean www.nytcooking.com. We have that very recipe there. There are a couple ways that it's described. We use the Britishism spatchcocked to describe it. And yes, it's a turkey with the backbone taken out, splayed out into a roasting pan and cooked. It goes quite evenly. It goes quite quickly. You can do it in a little under an hour if you're really jammed for time. And it's fantastic. It's not, again, it's not your Norman Rockwell preparation, but I think we're beyond that Norman Rockwell preparation at this point.
And Sam Sifton, carve the turkey in the kitchen, not at the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This, again, is the lie of the cliche, is that we're going to be out there. Can you imagine you cook one turkey a year and then you have to carve it in front of 15 people? This is a nightmare. And it's not the way you should be carving the turkey anyway. What you want to do is remove the turkey to the operating room, which is your kitchen. Mm-hmm. Remove the two breasts and slice them against the grain, and then take off the legs and thighs and chop that meat as well, and then arrange everything beautifully on a warm platter, hit it with that hot stock, and send it out to rave reviews at the dinner table. You don't want to be that guy with the electric carving knife at the table struggling to disassemble this thing. It's a recipe for disaster.
Here's another part of a Melissa Clark video. She is preparing a turkey here, and this year she's taking some liberties with the recipe in honor of her father, who always liked to experiment.
I am making a garlic and anchovy rubbed turkey, which is a little bit like a Provençal leg of lamb, except, you know, Thanksgiving appropriate. This is the first Thanksgiving that I'm cooking without my dad. It was something that we always did together. You know, it was a very special time. And one of the things we always did together was make the turkey.
Mm. Sam Sifton, there's Melissa Clark talking about cooking. This is the first Thanksgiving without her dad. This is our first Thanksgiving without our mother-in-law. My mother-in-law passed away this last year. And the last time probably we'll eat in her home before it's sold. It's kind of a hard year. These are things that come into our lives, right, at difficult times. And you cook in honor of them and your thanks.
Yes, you cook in honor and in thanks. And it's bittersweet. There will be some tears. I myself have cooked that first post-dad Thanksgiving, and it was tough. And I did cook in honor and in thanks. And there are aspects of our table that remain the same to that year, now 9 years or 10 years hence. Mm-hmm. I think Melissa's tribute to her father and his awesome tastes is really delicious. She creates this paste with the garlic and the anchovies. She cuts these little slits into the legs so that she can get that paste in there and really flavor the bird with these Provençal flavors. And it's a really good recipe.
And if you put slits all over the breast, it will overcook, right?
So you have to be careful. No. Yeah, I should warn you. please don't cut into the breast until you're ready to carve the breast, because there's not a lot of fat up there, and we want to protect that meat as much as possible. There's a real difference in when these things are going to get done. And the danger of Thanksgiving, as we all know, is overcooked breast meat.
All right, let's get to Charlie in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Charlie. I'm running out of time, but I want to get you in here. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, Sam. I just want to tip my hat to you. I learned to cook with Chef Louis in 21 Club in the 60s. I had a restaurant in Paris for 30 years, got hit by a car. I'm in St. Pete's now. I just wanted to tip my hat for your stuffing, because I always did it like that for my expatriate customers in Paris, with the broth, with a nice rich broth. Mm. And my trick is beating up egg whites on the side. You make a liaison. We put chestnuts in it in France and berries and everything. And I beat up the egg whites and incorporate it into the stuffing. Then I bake it. It's really light and delicious. And I do the same thing with a yam pie with maple syrup and baked ham, Virginia baked ham. And I make it half meringued with part of the yams and the ham and everything and egg whites. And I bake that in the oven. I did the other day as an experiment here in St. Pete's for a customer. Mm,
yeah.
Five of
customers.
Wow,
yep,
that sounds great.
It sounds terrific.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds great, Charlie. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
I just want to point out, I'm now chef certified. 30 years in a Parisian restaurant, and he likes my stuffing technique.
All right, let me get Anna in here in Newton. She's got a good question. Anna, real quick.
Hi there. Real quick question about how that last 10 minutes, how you get all of those dishes out onto the table or onto the buffet or whatever and keep them everything hot.
Okay, the most important thing here is not, please don't worry about keeping everything hot. What you want is everything's basically warm. And the best way to deal with that, and I realize we have some New England listeners who will understand, is that in a chill environment, what you really want to have is warm plates and platters, so that the stuff that's coming out of the oven or that's been sitting in proximity to the oven covered in foil, it's all pretty warm, pretty hot. But if you put it on a cold platter or on a cold plate, it's going to get cold fast. So to the extent that it's possible, serve warm food on warm serving platters and plates, and you'll be in the clover.
All right, 10 seconds left here, Sam. Last bit of advice as we move toward, we march toward Thanksgiving.
This is the most important thing I will say all hour, and please listen to me. Everything will be all right.
All right. If you say so, your recipes have created a lot of warm memories in our house, and not just at Thanksgiving. So thank you very much, Sam Sifton. Great to have you here. Our listeners love to hear from you. We're great and grateful for your time. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Jane. It's a pleasure.
Sam Sifton, food editor at the New York Times, founding editor of the website New York Times Cooking, author of the book Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. I'm Jane Clayson. Good cooking to you all. This is On Point.